It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone, and happy Thanksgiving. And we are here live today with a special 46 questions edition of the Brian Lehrer Show. A lot of radio stations are playing reruns this morning or just giving traffic reports every 3 minutes. But here we are before I go out to my own parents' place in Queens to celebrate with my family. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I hope you've got close people to get together with too, whoever you are listening today, unless you'd rather be alone and skip the whole messy ritual. And I know some people like that too. But we are here with a Thanksgiving morning activity to invite you to join in on called 46 Questions. This is an activity designed to be fun and interesting and bring us all a little closer together. It's an interactive talking and listening game. Let me invite our first group of you to call in and play, and then I'll explain a little more about what it is and why we're doing it today. But just to get the phones going right from the start, our first invitation is for people in your 20s and people in your 70s. Call in to play at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, if you want some of these 46 questions. What we hope is at this moment of such division and anxiety after the election, that we can bring people from different kinds of backgrounds, not to talk politics, but to reconnect as human beings with what I hope are some fun and interesting and mutually open interactions. And the questions aren't a secret. The first three are, given the choice of anyone in the world, whom would you want as a dinner guest? The number two, would you like to be famous? And in what way, if so? And number three, before making a telephone call, do you ever rehearse what you're going to say? So those are the first three questions, and we've got 43 others to go on to from there. Not everybody's going to get, 46 questions. You're each going to get a few. And we're going to try to match people this morning who have some kind of difference in your background. So we're not just all in our echo chambers by whatever category, age or religion or who you voted for, define your category. And we're starting it off by inviting people in your 20s and people in your 70s to call in. The difference in this case is obviously by age. People in your 20s and people in your 70s call in and play as our first group, 212-433-WNYC. Our screeners will be asking you if you're in your 20s or your 70s, or you didn't understand the instructions and you're somebody else. We'll save half our lines for people in your 20s and half for people in your 70s to answer the three questions I mentioned, and then we'll add other questions from there. So don't be insulted if you're bumped, because we're looking for our five lines with people in their 20s and our other five lines with people in their 70s. And again, the first three questions are, given the choice of anyone in the world, whom would you want as a dinner guest? We can adapt that for today as a Thanksgiving dinner guest. Number two, would you like to be famous? And if so, in what way? And number three, before making a telephone call, do you ever rehearse what you're going to say? And as your calls are coming in, I'll mention that this is something you can do a version of at your Thanksgiving gathering with whoever is there, if you so choose. It might be especially good if you're in one of those politically mixed families and you're dreading what might be a tense or awkward or angry time ahead today, right? And that's a lot of people. A CNN ORC poll released last night found 53% of Americans are dreading political conversations on this Thanksgiving Day. Of course, the poll could be wrong, like all the other polls, and really all your relatives moved to Scranton and voted for Trump. Ha. But one way or another, dread is in the air about what to say or how to avoid the elephant in the room for a lot of politically mixed families today. Some of you might have heard the United States of Anxiety special that we did last Friday night, where the best advice seemed to be to come to some kind of ground rules in advance if you're in a family like that, like either no politics at all, or you designate a set amount of time. Someone suggested 45 minutes to be done either before the Thanksgiving meal is served or afterwards, so you can say what you feel needs to be said, but contain it so it doesn't become the Thanksgiving from hell while you're all stuck there with each other for hour after hour after hour. And if you do talk politics with people who voted differently from you, remember that conversations also involve listening. Fran Lebowitz once said, the opposite of talking isn't listening, it's waiting. People are either talking or waiting to talk. Cynical, but too true, right? So remember that the opposite of talking can actually be listening. And that brings us back to the game we're going to play. A little more detail. This is an interactive talking and listening game that some of you know from a very popular New York Times article from last year called The 36 Questions That Lead to Love. They put it in the context of dating with that headline or getting close to somebody you're already with or married to. But it's really much broader than that. The questions were developed by Arthur Aaron, who I want to give credit to on the air right here, who runs the Interpersonal Relationship Lab at SUNY Stony Brook. And some of you may know that last Thanksgiving, WNYC's podcast, Only Human, picked up on 36 questions for its own series on how to be a better listener. That also inspired what we're about to do. You can check that podcast out anytime at onlyhuman.org/listenup. They also added some of their own questions, and I've added a few of my own, and that's why we're calling our version 46 questions today. Our goal is simply to have good conversation among those of you who call in, which I will help facilitate, generated by this list of 46 questions which I have in front of me. And what we hope is that at this moment of such division and anxiety after the election, that we can bring together people from different kinds of backgrounds, not to talk politics, but to reconnect as human beings with what I hope are some fun and interesting and mutually open interactions. So here we go. Debbie Daughtry came to work on Thanksgiving today, as she usually does for the Brian Lehrer Show, day after day. So, Debbie, can we put on line nine is fine, and line three. So we've got Samuel on his way to Massachusetts. Hi, Samuel. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Brian.
How old are you?
I'm 28.
And we've got Marie in Huntington. Hi, Marie. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Brian. Happy Thanksgiving.
And you don't have to tell me your exact age.
I'm not afraid of it. I'm very happy. I survived cancer 3 times. I'm 71.
All right. Samuel, meet Marie. Marie Samuel.
Nice to meet you.
Same here, Samuel. Where are you going? Massachusetts? North?
We're going to Aunt Cookie's house outside of Boston.
Okay. Well, I have a quick ride from Huntington to Dobbs Ferry, so it's not too far.
Samuel, okay. Aunt who?
Aunt Cookie.
Cookie.
How'd she get that nickname?
Well, her name is Carol, and Cookie is her pet name from when she was a little girl. And I think I'm the only one who's still allowed to call her Cookie.
All right. That's the privilege of the young nephew. So, Marie, given the choice of anyone in the world, who would you want as a dinner guest?
Well, I've been thinking about it since you posed the question, and there are three people that I can't decide. I would love to have Pope Francis with a lot of drinks in him, so he looks like a really amenable person, or the Dalai Lama, or Hillary Clinton. But we'll probably go with the Pope.
If you had to choose one.
Yes, I think I'd go with Pope Francis.
Samuel, how about you?
I think it's really funny that you say the Pope, because I was just thinking about who I was going to choose, and I think it's RuPaul.
That would be a great combo, because you know the Pope is very, very liberal. He just came out with the newest statement about forgiving people that have had abortions. He's our hope. I'm not a practicing Catholic, but there is hope with the Catholics with him in office.
So would you like to be famous, Samuel?
I don't think I'd like to be famous. I'm kind of shy.
If you had to be famous, in what way might you want to be famous?
Well, I work as a professional gardener, and so if I was going to be famous, I think I'd want to be a rich and famous horticulturalist.
Nice. Marie, how about you?
I've thought about that, and I think the cost of fame in America is too great for me. I would like to be famous in a sense that maybe I could help children or health issues, something that would give back to people.
What's the cost of fame?
I think people lose themselves. I think they lose a sense, they lose their soul. I think the cost of the wealth, the attention, you know, I think we all need to have some sort of introspection to move on with our lives and understand what's worth it. And unfortunately, there are very few people in the limelight. I'm really talking probably about celebrities in Hollywood, but I think even people, especially in politics, or even in great wealth in the industry, I don't see a lot of introspection as we might see presently.
So here's the third Arthur Aaron question. Before making a telephone call, do you ever rehearse what you're going to say? Marie, do you?
Unfortunately not. I should.
A lot of people should.
I know.
Samuel, how about you?
Of course, I always rehearse, and especially right now on the phone when the operator put me on hold, I was thinking, oh, my God, am I actually going to go through it? What am I going to say?
Oh, boy, this is great. I mean, this is my claim to fame, Brian.
You're both more famous than you wanted to be right at this very moment.
Right, as I'm peeling potatoes for mashed potatoes.
So here's a question that I asked, that I wrote for these age pairings.
Yeah.
What's one important thing that defines your generation? Samuel, what comes to mind? One important thing that defines your generation?
I think activism and organizing more and more are defining our generation. I think it's really necessary to stand up for what you believe in these days and to not back down and to open up conversations with people who don't think the same as you and to open up conversations with people in your family to kind of help them see where you're coming from and to really listen.
Marie, how about you?
Well, I'm a baby boomer, and the first word, probably from my background, would be guilt. But I think the people, unfortunately, I wasn't terribly active in the 60s, and that's probably one of my main regrets. I was a very good stay-at-home mom with kids, and I kind of liberated myself from marriage and my sense of who I was, programmed to be in my 40s. But I think that it was, we as a generation, I think, were a really goal-oriented and beginning of the incredible capitalization of consumerism that is part of our generation, this present generation of Americans. I mean, I grew up, I never went out to dinner except maybe for a holiday meal. We had very simple needs. We maybe took a trip to the Jersey Shore or to, you know, the beaches out here. And all of a sudden, with the increase of wealth and cars and homes, and I don't recognize America in some ways. Yeah. It's gotten very, very complicated.
Before you both go, now that you've gotten to know each other a little bit, is there any follow-up question?
I want to ask Samuel, why did you choose RuPaul?
I chose RuPaul because I think Ru has broken so many barriers and was really so brave with what she was doing in the late 80s and early 90s.
Okay.
And I really wanted to invite her over in drag or not in drag, whatever she wants, to kind of figure out why she was so brave and what was driving her and what lessons I can learn from that.
Okay.
You have a follow-up question for Marie, Samuel?
I guess just thank you for being you.
Oh, same here. This is really great. You know, I love young people. I was in education for over 30 years, and I think that's what really inspires me is the courage and the passion of young people. I'm going to see my nieces and nephews at the dinner today, And unfortunately, they've been programmed to be very quiet at meal. I mean, maybe they'll get them drunk enough that they could become more open like you.
Marie and Samuel, thank you so much for engaging.
And you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We should be thankful to be here.
You too. And thank you, Mr. Lair, for doing this. This is really nice.
Thank you very much. You guys are great. If you're just joining us, it's Thanksgiving Day Live on The Brian Lair Show, our 46 questions edition, and our first set going to matches or pairs of people in your 20s and in your 70s. And next we're going to bring on Clarissa in Queens and Herb is it Armonk?
Yes.
Herb in Armonk. You're in your 70s. You don't have to tell me exactly what age, but you're in your 70s, right?
Yes.
And Clarissa, you're 26?
Yes, that's right.
Clarissa, meet Herb.
Yes.
Herb, Clarissa.
Hi.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to Arthur Aaron's original question set and ask you guys, what would constitute a perfect day for you? Clarissa, what would constitute a perfect day for you?
Well, let's see. A perfect Thanksgiving day, you mean?
No, just a perfect day, any day.
Waking up without feeling the sense of dread, maybe, to confront the day ahead, having a pretty smooth transition from my home to work. I have a 45 to an hour commute. I'm a school teacher in Brooklyn, but I live in Queens. I teach art to kindergarten through fifth grade.
Uh-huh. Do you have a lot of dread on a lot of days?
I have a lot of thoughts about the near and far future, yeah.
You're talking about, like, as a result of the election or not so political?
Mostly political, yeah. Future about worries and dread about what's going to happen in January, what's going to happen in 6 months, where will I be in 6 months if the results of this election will prompt me to maybe move or I don't know. It's a lot of uncertainty. That's what I feel.
It's a very modest start to a perfect day. You don't wake up with in a state of dread and your commute goes okay. How would that day, give me a capper to the perfect day.
Well, let's see. Coming home with a couple of hours to spare before going to bed, hanging out with my husband and our cat and two birds, cooking a meal together and talking about our days, and also thinking about, you know, the days to come with some hope.
Uh-huh. It's so normal. Yeah. It's so sweet that that's your perfect day. Herb, you've had a few minutes to think about this now. What would your perfect day look like? Herb? Herb, you there? Do we still have Herb? Herb and Airmont, are you there? I think Herb chickened out.
Did Herb can you hear me?
Oh, now we got you. Hi, Herb. Were you able to hear us?
Thanksgiving is always a lot of fun, and today it will be also. Relatives coming from all over. It's going to be at my niece's house. If we all were younger, a game of touch football would be wonderful, but we're past that, I think.
That's the Kennedy family.
Right.
Thanksgiving, right? The touch football.
Right.
All right. Well, I'm going to go on to the next question from Arthur Aaron set. When did you last sing to yourself or to someone else? Herb, can you remember the last time you sang to yourself or to someone else?
I don't have a good voice. It embarrasses even me. I spoke to a voice teacher over the phone once.
Did you?
And she said, demonstrate your voice. So I sang Happy Birthday, and she said, well, we have a lot of work to do.
Oh, she just wanted your money. And that was the last time when you sang it to a voice coach.
That may have been the last time.
Clarissa, how about you?
I think the last time was probably yesterday when I was in class. Oftentimes to get the attention of my students, I'll sing out instructions or I'll reiterate certain routines, for example, to put your brush or wash your brush and then dab it before dipping it into a different color on the paint set. So I'll sing it out, and then that will capture their attention, and they'll sing it with me. So it's kind of like a sing-along.
Nice. Herb, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I just said wonderful. It sounds great.
Yeah. Maybe nobody sings more other than a professional musician than somebody who teaches young children. next question. If you were able to live to the age of 90 and retain either the mind or body of a 30-year-old for the last 60 years of your life, either the mind or the body of a 30-year-old, which would you retain, Clarissa?
The mind.
Herb?
The body. I would assume that my mind would stay as it is now, which I'm not dissatisfied with.
Right. This looks different from your 70s than it does from your 20s. All right, and let me ask you both the age question before we move on to some other folks. What's one important thing that defines your generation? Clarissa, you have one?
Uncertainty.
Good one. The uncertain generation at age 26. And Herb? Oh, we lost Herb. All right. Well, wait a minute, Clarissa. You're going to get a bonus. You're going to get a bonus pair in here.
Okay.
Can we add line two? Can we add line two to Clarissa? We're saying hello now to Warren in the Flatiron District. Hi, Warren.
Hi, Warren.
Warren, you there?
Yep. Hello.
Hey there. So you get to pinch hit for Herb here on the question, what's one important thing that defines your generation? And I assume you're in your 70s.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I would say inclusiveness, because I grew up in the 1950s and 60s, and so a very rebellious generation, and a number of groups suddenly demanded rights for their own group, and the chance to participate fully in society kept expanding. And I hope that just continues and goes on and on so everybody has a voice.
What are you thinking there, Clarissa, since you're humming?
I appreciate what Warren has said. It's hard for me to relate to it, though. I guess coming from a different experience, for him, there could be some truth to that. I don't know what it was like in the 60s and the 50s. I sometimes wish I could travel back in time just to experience that. But I don't know. It's hard for me to relate to that.
You mean because you think your generation doesn't have those qualities?
Not 100%, no.
How does that look to you, Warren, looking down at the people in their 20s today?
Well, I would say it's all apparent to us from the election that we're a very divided society. And there are a number of people who really cringe when we hear the word identity, fulfillment. They think, well, we're just interested in surviving and having a job, and we can't waste our time thinking about their rights and versus somebody else's rights. Let's just have food on our table. So I understand that, but I think that we have room for both sides to speak. So everybody's included.
Now, Herb and Armonk is back. Somehow we got disconnected, so I'm going to let Herb answer this same question since he was so nice to everybody in the earlier part. Hey,
Thank
Herb.
You.
So what do you think defines your generation, being in your 70s?
Perseverance and just getting through of survival. There are. I know people who are very involved with deep charities, I admire them more than I admire myself. But perseverance, I think.
All right.
When Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
In my cohort and the next cohort, people older than me, we will still have to persevere against our frailties.
Herb and Warren and Clarissa, thank you so much for engaging. Happy Thanksgiving to all
thank
of you.
You.
I hope.
Happy thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Hope it's
thank
a great one. Okay, so we can release those lines. Let's take Simone on I-95. We'll suspend our no talking on the air when you're driving today, or maybe Simone's a passenger, even better.
Hi.
And let's take Gregory in Harlem on line 10. Gregory, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And here's what we're going to do to change the script a little bit. I want to add one caller in your 40s. Okay, so screeners got this. We're going to bump everybody else. I apologize to everybody else in your 20s and 70s who called in. And this is going to be our last one by age. Then we're going to do pairings by immigration status in a few minutes. But we'll finish this one up by adding a third person in a different generation. So we're looking for one person in your 40s to call 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 to participate in our interactive talking and listening game of 46 questions on this live edition of The Brian Lehrer Show on Thanksgiving Day today, along with Simone. Simone, where are you? You're on the road?
Hi. Yeah, I'm here.
You're on the road?
Yeah, I'm driving with my family. We're going to Pennsylvania. They want me to put the phone on speaker, but I can't hear you if I do that.
Oh.
So.
Okay. Well, everybody could chime in if you do that. But or maybe you don't want them to hear. How old are the people in the car? You have little kids in the car?
My mom's driving. She's 45 and then 47. Whoops. And then my stepdad is there too, 57. Right? And then my little sister is right beside me. Her name is Ellie, and she's 10 years old.
Hi, Ellie.
You want to say hi, Ellie?
Hi. And good. I'm glad you're not driving. And Gregory, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
As a matter of fact, I'm just on my way out to go to the Thanksgiving Day parade.
Oh, wow.
And But I had to call you, Brian.
I'm glad. Are you too?
I couldn't invite you for dinner. I would do that.
Well, I appreciate the thought. Isn't it too late? Is it too late for the Thanksgiving Day parade?
Actually, the parade started a couple of hours ago, so I'm going to be able to at least feel it. But I'm meeting some friends, and they're late too, so it doesn't matter. There will still be 3 million people on the street.
Okay. All right. So should we add Jane to this group on line one? Jane in Manhattan. Hi, Jane.
Yes.
Hi, Jane. And you're in your 40s, right?
Correct.
You don't have to get more specific. I think people the reaction of people in their 70s when I said you don't have to say your exact age, they're like, oh, I don't care. People in their 40s probably care more.
That's fine. I am 46.
And meet Simone in her 20s and Gregory.
I'm 20.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
70s. You're exactly 20, Simone?
Yep.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me do some society questions with you. How would you describe, let me ask you this one. What's the identity group that you'd say you most identify with and why? Jane, you want to start?
I guess New Yorker.
Okay.
That would be the identity group. I mean, technically, I am white. I am raised Jewish, but in the loose New York style.
Mm-hmm. So New Yorker.
Exactly.
Simone, what about you? Can be anything, you know, race or class or gender.
That's kind of a difficult question to answer, I feel, at my age, because I am sort of like in this in-between period between like adulthood and like adolescence, you know, so.
But I mean, like race or class or gender or nationality or New Yorker, like Jane said, or
I guess
religion.
The part of myself that I identify the most with is my heritage. I'm from Canada originally, but my family is really diverse. My dad is French and has a Haitian side, and I'm white. But my
my race isn't like obvious from appearances.
Uh-huh. So are you one of those? Are you one of those people who everybody asks, "What are you?"
Hello.
Are you Simone? Are you one of the? Are you one of those people who everybody asks, "What are you?"
No, I think people mostly assume that I'm like either German or like Swedish.
Uh-huh.
So I sort of like really, you know, I love that part of my family history that you know, nobody knows about but me, unless I want to tell them about it.
Cool. Gregory, how about you?
Oh, I'm a boomer.
Yeah, that's your identity group, boomer.
Oh, yes, because, I mean, if you're a New Yorker and you're a boomer, then you're the best people in the world.
Oh, little boomer supremacy there. So how do you each think that this, whatever it is that you identify with, defines you? Jane, you said New Yorker. So what does that mean? What does that mean? What does that make you?
I was raised to accept everybody because New York is such a diverse city. And I grew up with that all around me. I grew up on the Upper West Side back when it wasn't very safe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And my parents really taught me that everyone around you is exactly the same.
Gregory? Gregory, how about you, this boomer supremacy? What characteristics?
Well, I think what defines me more than anything else, I'm part of the creative group of people here in New York City. I think that as a writer and a producer, I think that that's we are the drivers of many things that go on in all of America. I think the creativity level here is very, very high, and that makes me. I think that defines me more than anything.
Uh huh. And Simone, this secret Swiss German side of you, or however you want to put it.
I think that the future is going to be just a huge melting pot. You know, I think that everybody has like so much national pride. You know, but I think in the future that those sort of borders are just going to come down because everybody is going to be so mixed and you know, race is not going to be such an issue that it is now. And I think a lot of people, you ask them, you know, where are you from? And they say, oh, I'm here, but I'm from here, but my grandparents are from, you know, here and here. Everybody is so mixed. And I think that, in, you know, 20 years from now, it's going to be even more diverse, you know.
A 20-year-old one-worlder, Simone, on I-95.
I think that's the future.
Gregory, what do you want to say?
I just want to agree with that 100%. I mean, I'm black. My wife was white. I have two zebra children. And
there we go.
And I think more than anything else, that is what is going to change most about this country in the future.
Even after this election.
Maybe even especially. People might start, pardon the pun, loving each other.
That's nature. That's just human nature.
I would hope so.
Well, that's a great note on which to end this group. Gregory in Harlem, Simone on I-95, and Jane in Manhattan, thank you all very much for engaging.
Thank
this
you.
Was so great. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you.
To you,
right
too.
Back at you, Brian.
It is Thanksgiving Day live on The Brian Lehrer Show, our 46 questions edition. We'll continue in a minute, and I'll break open a new set of questions. If you're just joining us, we're putting different groups of you on together for this interactive talking and listening activity to bring us all a little closer on this Thanksgiving Day, which comes this year at such a time of division in our country, right? And for many people, such a time of anxiety in our country. This is not for political debate, no matter what groups we get to as we go. And we will do a segment later specifically for people who voted for Trump and people who are horrified or fearful because of the election of Trump. That'll be later. But we're just talking and listening to each other, not debating. The next group we'd like to invite as we clear the board of all the people who are calling in by age group, and thank you all for your willingness to engage. But we're going to go to another group now, immigrants to this country and people who were born and raised here. And we'll put some pairs of you on together, okay? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Immigrants to this country and people who were born and raised here, call up if you want to get some of the next questions in our 46 questions edition of The Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll put some of you on together. Immigrants to this country and people born and raised here. And again, the questions are not secrets. I'll throw out the next couple of questions we're going to do so you know what you're getting yourself into. From Arthur Aaron's original set, a perfect question for Thanksgiving, even though it wasn't designed specifically for Thanksgiving. For what in your life do you feel most grateful? That'll be the first question when you immigrants and native-born Americans call up. For what in your life do you feel most grateful? And then if you could change anything about the way you were raised, what would it be? So immigrants and people born in the United States and raised here, we're going to put some of you on together to answer some of these 46 questions and talk to each other. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll do it right after this. It's the Brian Lehrer Show, live on Thanksgiving today, our 46 questions edition based on the activity called 36 Questions by Arthur Aarons of Stony Brook University. By the way, I am thankful for the Brian Lehrer Show team that came to work on Thanksgiving Day to pull this off. Lisa Allison leading the way with Justine Dom, Alex Kahn, and Bijan Roganji. So thanks to all of you for coming in and working, at least up until noon today. And then we'll still all have time to go do afternoon and evening with our family or wherever people are going. And our next question set, as I said before the break, is our next pairings are going to be immigrants to this country and people born and raised in this country. So let's start with Elsa in Alphabet City on the Lower East Side. Hi, Elsa.
Hi, how are you? Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. And Richard, oh, you know what? I think I made an incorrect match. I put two of you together who were born and raised here. So so let me fix this. Elsa, you stay on. And
okay.
How about Lewis on line one, who's an immigrant from Peru, I think. And Richard, we'll get you in the next pair. Lewis, hi. Thanks for calling. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. I'm honored to talk to you.
And Elsa, where'd you grow up?
I actually grew up in Idaho, and I'm Mexican-American. So, I always just say that I'm Mexican. I was raised here, but come from an immigrant family.
Uh-huh. So your parents were immigrants, but you were born and raised here.
I'm actually third generation here. So we have long ties to the United States.
Uh-huh. Third gen. So your grandparents were the immigrants?
One of them was. The three of them were born in the States.
Uh-huh. And that's an American story, isn't it?
Yes.
With many of the mixes. So Elsa, meet Lewis. Lewis, meet Elsa.
Hi, Lewis.
Hi, how are you?
And happy Thanksgiving to both of you. And to the questions that I said I was going to ask, for what in your life do you feel most grateful, Elsa?
I actually feel most grateful to be Mexican-American, to have my culture and, like, really know my culture, but to have been born, I realize that I'm very lucky to be an American. Although I never say Mexican-American when I introduce myself, I say I'm Mexican. That's the side that I feel the strongest towards.
Uh-huh.
So I just feel very lucky that to have that culture, but also be American.
When people get so upset that Trump called that judge Mexican when he was really Mexican-American and born here, what was your reaction?
I think it's just because Trump is known for his derogatory slurs towards Mexicans. That's why it's like whenever he says that word, we flinch because it's not going to be good. That's why, not because I don't think it's because he didn't say America behind it. It's just because we know what he's implying.
Yeah.
He's implying, you know, should build the wall around him. So it was the implication, not the fact that he dropped the word American.
And what might you say to listeners who think, huh, she's in this category of born and raised here, which you were, but the first thing in your identity that you said you're most identified with and proud of is Mexican, not American. And people go, oh, that's not good. She's here. She's born and raised here, but American isn't her first thing.
Well, I think for me, what I've always thought about it, I guess it's been a given. I'm here. I'm raised here. Obviously, I'm American. And, you know, as patriotic as, you know, we are at this age. But, you know, my family, what I grew up with, you know, it was Mexican food, Mexican music. So that's, you know, obviously we weren't in a completely Mexican community, but, you know, we were migrant workers. So.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what I identify with. I guess I just figure that the American's a given
Since
I was born and raised here.
Yeah, gosh, and that wasn't even an immigration question. All I asked was what in your life do you feel most grateful? And we got into all of that. Lewis, how about you? For what in your life do you feel most grateful?
I'm really grateful about the New York experience. I came here in 1992 as a teenager, and throughout my 20-plus years here, I've been actually surrounded by very helpful community. And not only talking about Peruvians or Hispanics that are the people that mostly surrounded me, but I'm talking about all sorts of people. Just from the moment I started school, you got, you know, Greeks and Italians and Irish. People that migrated for the, you know, our first or second generation here, but for some reason they've been really, really helpful in trying to get you to embrace and be part of the New York. Right now I live in New Jersey, so it's a different experience, I guess, that from New York, but it carries on. It's the same kind of ideal.
Neat. I'm going to go on to the next question in the set, which is, if you could change anything about the way you were raised, what would it be? Lewis, anything?
Not really, because I guess what helps me be me are all those experiences, right? Being raised by working parents, being part of an extended family. My grandparents helped, you know, raise me as well. I was surrounded by and uncles that also helped, you know, take care of me and my cousins and my neighbors. I cannot say that I would change anything because finally where I am right now is a reflection of all that that's been, you know, from years past.
Do either of you want to ask anything, like a follow-up question of the other?
I would actually want to just say I exactly what he just said about not wanting to change anything, actually. We have very similar backgrounds, and I can relate to all of that. Like, growing up with a huge family, growing up with your aunts and uncles, growing up with a really great support system. The only thing I would change is I wish I would have learned Spanish more when I was little.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be about the only thing.
You don't consider yourself bilingual or kind of?
I am bilingual, but I speak what we call Spanglish. So, it's, you know, it's very an American accent. So
right.
That would be the only thing. But I wouldn't change it for the world because that's why I am who I am.
And that's your answer to the question, which, forgive me, I forgot to pose to you as well, which is if you would change anything about the way you were raised. So would either of you now like to ask a follow-up question of the other based on anything that you heard?
Well, I think she addressed something very important. My kids, I have three kids. They're born here, and their experiences are different, and they're going to be different from mine. And then that's probably something I should enforce. part of my history, part of my my parents' history, or story, I should say, and trying to enforce also our language, because right now that's kind of they understand it, they speak it to a certain extent, but they're not fluent about it.
Elsa?
Yeah, and I would echo that. I would say that's definitely what happens with, you know, the generations coming up today and even the generations, you know, 20, 30 years ago. You know, we tried to assimilate so much to be here that our parents, you know, sometimes tend to just speak English to us or Spanish is just spoken at the home. So I think it would be amazing to have, you know, a rash of the newer generation, like, being just completely fluent. If I would have known how much it would really help me to be 100% fluent, I would have definitely jumped on that sooner.
Is there anything on the sort of flip side of that that's important about this country that you would like future immigrants to know, either of you?
On the flip side of language?
Just of anything.
To know about this country, I guess just immigrants and coming in, there is endless possibilities. I mean, there's so much that you can do here, and especially being in New York now, it's limitless. It definitely is the land where some dreams can come true. I mean, it's not easy, and it's going to be difficult, but it's definitely possible, and I see it every day.
Lewis?
Yeah, I think it depends on the person and at the level, at the stage in their lives that they come into the country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely certain that my parents had to struggle a lot more than my brothers and I did. And that struggle, you know, that extra work based on the long run on, for example, on our kids, on our future generations.
Hey, Elsa, before you go, did you say before that you were raised by parents who were migrant workers?
Yes.
So when you were a kid, were you going, like, from farm to farm in the western United States?
Exactly. We were stationed mostly in Idaho, but we would do the trek to Texas once a year. But, yeah, we worked out in the farms every summer. So definitely there's a struggle there, but...
That's pretty... For, you know, for somebody from Union County or elsewhere in this area, that's pretty exotic, I guess you'd say. What was that like?
It was difficult, but to go back to that first comment about being surrounded by family and, like, I had all my aunts and my uncles around me, we actually made it fun. There was, like, we actually would look forward to it as children because we knew the summer would be spent with our cousins, with our aunts, with our uncles. We would have dinner every night. We would lunch every day. So when you have a big family, sometimes it is pretty awesome.
Cool. Elsa and Lewis, thank you so much for engaging. You guys were great, and we really, really appreciate it. And thousands of people enjoyed listening to you and feel more connected because of Thanksgiving. Hearing your voice. Thank you, Elsa. Thank you, Lewis. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Happy
Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
And let's go on to our next pair as we ask for one person who was born and raised here, one person who's an immigrant to this country, and Richard in Brooklyn, who I put on earlier by mistake.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Richard. Born here. And let's try line six, Elizabeth in New Rochelle. Elizabeth, you're on WNYC. Hi there. Elizabeth, you there? Do we have you now?
Oh, my God. Yes, I am. I'm here.
So glad to have you. So, Richard, I understand you're from Brooklyn, but you're far away from Brooklyn this morning.
Yeah, I'm in Arizona with my dad, who's 90 here.
All right. Hi, Dad. And is Brooklyn where you were born and raised?
Yes, and in fact, yeah, I still live there most of the time, but I've actually lived in different parts of the country, but I grew up totally in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
For the first 30 years of my life.
And Elizabeth, you're an immigrant. What's your crossing story?
Well, I came to the United States as a four-year-old, born in Austria, Vienna. And we came to this country because of the Holocaust, persecution of Jews. And it's been an interesting life, a very schizophrenic kind of life.
What do you mean schizophrenic?
Well, you know, there was the old customs that my parents, European, that we were civilized, had good manners. We were good people and came to the States and tried to assimilate, but really held on to a lot of the European values and stayed in a very European type of circle in terms of where we lived.
So even though you came as a four-year-old, you still feel like and you're 81 now, I see.
Right.
You still
mm-hmm.
feel like an immigrant.
I feel different. I don't feel like an immigrant, but I do feel different.
Uh-huh. And Richard, what did your 90-year-old father, or does he do for a living?
He was a clothing manufacturer in New York with his father, who was an immigrant from the generation of Jews who came, I guess, at the turn of the last century. I guess my grandfather was born in about 1898. My father then was a rep for various pretty well-known fashion mm-hmm. firms back in Florida.
And how about your mom when you were growing up?
Mom was a housewife. Mom got married at 18, and we were lucky, you know. I mean, it was the 50s. My dad could support, like, five of us in a house in Brooklyn with a swimming pool. And frequent vacations to the Caribbean, and it was a world when most of my friends' mothers didn't work. A few did.
Mm-hmm. There's a house in Brooklyn with a swimming pool.
Yeah.
So, from the question set by Arthur Ahrens, if you could wake up tomorrow having gained any one quality or ability, what would it be? Elizabeth, what might it be if you could wake up tomorrow having gained any one quality or ability?
Well, I think I'm very inhibited about being Jewish. It was a terrible ordeal for my parents because of their Jewishness to come to this country, and my parents would never put a Star of David around my neck. And I always felt that the American Jews had so much more freedom just to be who they are. And I always felt I had to somehow deny it and was never comfortable about being Jewish.
Richard, how about you?
I'd like to respond to what Elizabeth says.
Sure.
As a Jewish American who, like, never really had to think about it, and I still don't really think about it. It just seems like something that, you know, just like a very basic part of me. I did know people growing up in the 50s, I'm 65, who come from Elizabeth's point of view. And so I saw them, they struggled a lot more, I think, with their religious identity. I frankly never thought about it very much. But if I had to wake up with a new ability, you said?
Yeah.
I'd like to see the future, but I'm not sure about, on second thought, I'm not sure I would like to know what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. I think I have all the abilities I want at the present time. I'd like the ability not to become demented.
Not to become what? I'm sorry, I lost that word.
My mother had Alzheimer's and she died a few months ago, and I'd like the ability never to get dementia.
Well, you bring up another question that's in the Arthur Ahrens set, so I'm going to throw this one out to both of you. You imply this question with your answer. If a crystal ball could tell you the truth about yourself, your life, the future, or anything else, what would you want to know? So, Richard, since you said, you brought that up, what would you want to know about the future? Anything about the future? The question is about yourself, your life, the future, or anything else, if the crystal ball could tell you. So it could be about you or it could be outside you.
I sort of want to know if there's going to be flying cars eventually. I grew up in the era going to the 1964 World's Fair and Futurama. I've been waiting all these years for those flying cars.
You're going right to the sci-fi technology.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, how about you?
Oh, boy. I guess I would just really like to know that persecution and pointing people out for various reasons will not happen. I'm very nervous about that. Don't know what this new administration will bring. So that's what I'd like to know. I'd like to just be sure that we can stay on an even keel and learn to live with each other.
Hopefully everybody will learn to live with each other in their flying cars sometime in the future. Elizabeth in New Rochelle and Richard in Brooklyn, from Brooklyn in Arizona. Happy Thanksgiving to both of you. Thank you so much.
And to
Happy
you, Brian.
Happy Thanksgiving, Elizabeth.
Yeah, you've been a light in my life.
thank you very much, and thanks for engaging. You were a light in all our listeners' lives today. It's Thanksgiving Day, live on The Brian Lehr Show, our 46 Questions edition. And after the news, we're going to go on to people who voted for Trump and people who are horrified or afraid because Trump has been elected president. And again, I guarantee you this is not for political debate. We're not having a political show today, not a political debate, certainly. Just trying to put people from different walks of life, different kinds of categories. We've done it matching people of different age groups, generations earlier in the hour. There, people who are immigrants matched with people who were born and raised here. And now we're going to go on to people who voted for Trump and people who are horrified or even fearful that Trump was elected president. Call up and we'll put you on together, and I'll let you know, because these questions are not a secret, what the next three questions are going to be. And they will be, well, I'll give you the next two. Is there something that you've dreamed of doing for a long time, and why haven't you done it? So that's not a political question. And then what is the greatest accomplishment of your life? Those will be our first two questions, and we'll go on to some other stuff. Is there something that you've dreamed of doing for a long time? Why haven't you done it? And what is the greatest accomplishment of your life? We're going to ask people who voted for Trump and people who are fearful or anxious because Trump has been elected president. Put you on together. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. It's The Brian Lehr Show on WNYC. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We are here live on Thanksgiving Day playing 46 questions. If you're just tuning in and thinking, what the heck is that? That's not what they usually do on The Brian Lehr Show. A little more detail. This is an interactive talking and listening game that some of you know from a very popular New York Times article from last year called The 36 Questions That Lead to Love. They put it in the context of dating with that headline, or if you're married or kind of, you know, with a solid partner, getting to know that person more intimately. But it's really much broader than that. The questions were developed by Arthur Aron, A-R-O-N, who runs the Interpersonal Relationships Lab at SUNY Stony Brook. And our goal this morning is simply to have good conversations among those of you who call in, which I'm helping to facilitate. Some of you may also know that our Only Human podcast picked up on 36 questions for its own series last Thanksgiving on how to be a better listener, and you can still hear that if you want to follow up on this, if you've been enjoying it, at onlyhuman.org/listenup, onlyhuman.org/listenup. And I added 10 questions. The Only Human team added some questions. So we're calling it 46 questions instead of 36. And what we're hoping is that at this moment of such division and anxiety after the election, that we can bring together people from different kinds of backgrounds, not to talk politics, but to reconnect as human beings with what I hope are some fun and interesting and mutually open interactions. And I think they've been great so far in the first hour of the show. As we put people on together from different age groups and with different immigration statuses. And now we've invited people who either voted for Trump or are horrified or even fearful that Trump is going to be the next president. And our first pairing who called in during the news, two Long Islanders, John in Massapequa, who voted for Donald Trump. Hey, John, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, and thank you for being here today so I have something other to do than look at just my turkey cooking.
Thank you for thanking me. And Lori in Long Beach, not a Trump supporter, I presume, right, Lori?
Very much not so.
So, but we got two South Shore folks here. I don't know if the more east you go, the more people voted for Trump. But Lori, meet John. John, meet Lori.
Good morning, Lori, and happy Thanksgiving.
Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving.
And the questions that I mentioned I'd start with before the news are what I'll start with. So is there something, John, that you've dreamed of doing for a long time, and why haven't you done it?
It's always been a goal of mine to open up a small business, whether it be on Long Island or in the city, something that my grandfather and my father both did. But unfortunately, it's been a little on the elusive side for me. Over the years.
Lori, how about you? Is there something you've dreamed of doing?
I've always had a dream of learning another language and becoming fluent. And the last few years, I haven't because of personal reasons, but I do plan on doing it, becoming fluent in Italian.
What's been the biggest impediment, John, to starting that business?
It's certainly not the drive on my part. There have been numerous obstacles financially. I'm a survivor of a divorce, which is horrifying in and of itself. But on the recovery or on the mend, trying to get the startup money and being eligible for certain programs that are available to some people but not everyone.
Mm-hmm. And, Lori, anything? I know you said personal reasons, so you don't have to go into it if you don't want. But what's been...
Well, that's actually probably similar to John's related to that. So without getting, you know, further into it.
That have left you really...
Quite the epidemic, I must say.
I think you both understand what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So the next question in the set, as I said, I would follow Arthur Aaron's question 15. What is the greatest accomplishment of your life? Lori, what would you say?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of it relates to some of my personal things, but just doing...
It can be personal.
Raising my daughter, who's now 10.
That counts.
And getting my degree, getting a, you know... postgraduate degree.
John, how about you?
Well, Lori, you stole my you stole my answer. But my children, mm-hmm. I just this is my oldest daughter's first year in college, and in my family, I am the first generation to graduate college, and she'll be the next generation to not only graduate college but hopefully become a doctor.
Awesome. Is there anything either of you would want to ask each other as a follow-up before we go on to other questions?
I do. I'm a little perplexed. You know, regardless of what the outcome of the election was going to be.
Uh-oh, you're going there.
What's that?
You're going there. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I would have accepted, and certainly will accept, either way, how the election went, and not in a gloating way at all, but I wonder what people think that are disappointed with the result, as to what things are going to be different in their life that's going to be that upsetting to them. Our economy is failing, our school system needs to be brushed up a little bit, and I'd like to see some of the politicians, especially here on Long Island, that have committed crimes. I'd like to see them go to jail. And I'm wondering what other things would you see as a major change in your life based on the election?
Should I answer this?
Yeah. Will you? Please.
Well, first of all, my understanding about the economy is that it has thrived and certainly improved under Obama's administration. The things that I'm most fearful of are, certainly there are flaws in the system, there are flaws in the education system. Does that mean it could improve? Yes. Does that mean it could get worse? Absolutely. And to use that as an example, even his appointment of the Secretary of Education yesterday is a very frightening choice. just use one example of this new cabinet that he's putting together. That is a real scare for public schools and the children that go to them.
In the past, I've always felt that I've wasted a lot of time worrying about things that may or may not come to pass. And I was I had quite a bit of anxiousness about this election also. But again, whatever the outcome was, we have to live with it. And I'm hoping that people that didn't get what they wanted realize that I don't think it's going to be as bad as everybody's anticipating. I really don't. I think once the initial sting of losing an election or fighting for an election, as people see it, I think once that's gone, I think we got to all hunker down, we all have to cooperate, and we all have to make it work. So regardless of who's at the helm, we have to work together. That's where our vote, that's where our power really comes into play.
Want to keep going? Go ahead, Lori.
I agree that we should all work together. It's kind of ironic because the goal of the Republicans the last 8 years has been to obstruct, obstructionism was the name of the game. So there was none of that left. We're all in this together. But I do believe that we are all in this together. The difference is it's a euphemism to say this is just a disappointment. It's not the same as disappointment. I was disappointed when George W. Bush was elected. This is scary. This is different. This is someone that represents, division and this us versus them mentality. He's the one that tapped into the worst part of people that has created this divisiveness, I believe. It's the opposite of a message of unity. It's the opposite. It's us versus them. It's conservative. It's the rural versus the elitist. The liberal media versus the working people. It just goes on and on and on. Us versus them. Overseas versus Americans. Mm-hmm. Blacks versus white. Hispanics versus white. So it's kind of ironic to me and hypocritical to say, okay, now let's all work together and just accept our new president. This is different than any other year. This is a president that is acting like a fascist, that is acting like, someone that wants to divide people and bring out hate and scapegoat. It's very, very scary, and it's different.
Do you, rather than just go back and forth on debate, yes, he is, no, he isn't, or whatever, from this point, let me push it a little bit, to the listening piece of this talking and listening conversation. Do you, or experiment, John, do you hear what Lori is describing and acknowledge any of the fears based on Trump's own behavior or anything else that his election has sparked?
I think that there was a lot of mudslinging on both sides, and I think that people feel the divide, not just because of this election. They felt it long before that, long, long before that. And I think that people love to take sides. You know, we're a herding breed, We like to gather with those that are like us, and we like to, like-minded, and we our neighborhoods reflect that.
We're herding.
I'm sorry.
I'm saying both.
And hearing at this point.
Yes.
And I think what's happening is that people are taking what they want to hear, and they're putting that in the forefront. And I think that's where, I was in a managerial position for many years, and I had to listen to, people get into arguments, and I had to listen to both sides, and then I had to sit there and, come up with this Solomonistic resolution to the whole problem without being, being told that, oh, I was sexist, I was this, I was that. So you have to listen to facts blindly, if that's possible. There were not a lot of facts put out there. There was a lot of mudslinging. What I came away with was that Donald Trump used the business world to make his millions. He used the laws that were on the books that he had nothing to do with. And he also, he pushed it. I'm not going to say he didn't. But you tell me one individual that's in business that doesn't push it, Okay, and I'll show you that somebody is out of business in 6 months.
So Lori, and we're going to move on from just doing the straight sort of political debate here, but this is an anticipation of what a lot of people are going to go through with Thanksgiving dinner later on today, probably. Lori, is there anything that you can acknowledge about why John, from what you're hearing him say, or other people are given hope by Trump, while you and so many other people are given fear?
I mean, I'm an empathic person, and I have a strong ability to see other people's sides, and I can see the part about them thinking that, oh, he's going to help with the economy and you want to change. But by the same token, I don't think it's logical. First of all, I don't think his whole platform is based on being a savvy businessman. He's not a savvy businessman. He's born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Writing off certain things all businessmen do, but not all businessmen don't pay taxes.
But that's about him. That's not about the hope that people are feeling who voted for him.
Okay, I understand it, but I think it's really false hope, and it's ignorant. And if you take a good look at him,
I don't want to continue to go down this road with the two of you, but given the orientation that now everybody hears that you each have, let me back out and ask you one sort of related question, but not to get back into pro-Trump, anti-Trump. I'm just curious, each of you, how fragile do you think our democracy is? And what, if anything, could potentially destroy it? Lori, do you want to go first on that?
I've always felt it was really strong, and over the course of the last few months have actually come to the conclusion that it's pretty fragile. The things that have come out, the things that have been allowed to it seems pretty fragile to me that somebody like this can get elected that doesn't seem to value democracy and be creating a cabinet that it doesn't feel like it. So,
but that's still in the context of democracy at this moment. He's creating a cabinet of people who you find many of objectionable. But any particular threat to democracy, what could destroy the democracy that Trump might do?
Well, he's already put out the message that he's not going to allow transparency. He's very anti the media, so that in and of itself, I think, is anti democracy.
Mm-hmm. Did sit with the Times for a long interview the other day. But John, how about you? How fragile do you think our democracy is, and what, if anything, could potentially destroy it?
I think the divisiveness of this election, I don't think it'll destroy democracy. Democracy will always be in place. How much it's going to affect my life and my family's life is the part that I think people are concerned about. I don't think that whether Hillary won or Donald won, that democracy would have faded away. I mean, it's obviously the system is in place. We utilize the system. If you didn't vote, then democracy doesn't work for you because you're not part of it. You will feel the effects of it eventually, but they're not. I think that we have a system that nobody else in the world has, and we have to embrace it. We have to sometimes we have to do a little housekeeping when it comes to our system. I also feel that people, when they don't get, and this is no reflection on what we're talking about, Lori, but when people don't get their way, they get very, they get like a little standoffish, or they say, oh, this was rigged or that was rigged. And Donald Trump did that at the very beginning. This is rigged and that's rigged. But the core of democracy will always be intact. It's just a matter of how much somebody's willing to take of it. And how much of it is going to affect your life, have a negative impact on your life? That's where I think people will reflect on whether they believe in the democracy or they don't.
We're gonna
purely opinion.
We're going to move on to another set of callers. I just want to read one tweet that came in. And there are a lot of other tweets that are reacting, to be honest, mostly negatively to what you've been saying, John. But to the one I want to read is from Anna, who tweets, "To Lori and John, you were brave to have that conversation." And I agree. So I appreciate both of you engaging today on and off the politics on this Thanksgiving Day on our talking and listening experiment.
Quick little snippet before I go.
Quick.
And Lori will appreciate this. What's the difference between a good attorney and a bad attorney, and a great attorney? A good attorney knows the law. A great attorney knows the judge.
I know it. Okay.
All right.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Lori, happy Thanksgiving. John, happy Thanksgiving. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we'll go after a break to another Trump supporter and another person very unhappy or fearful that Trump was elected. But in the spirit of the 46 questions, listening and talking experiment that we're doing today, we're going to go back to non-political questions. And we're going to ask, what's the place on earth you want to visit? And why haven't you been there yet? And what recurring dream or nightmare do you have? And what do you think it says about you? And then we'll see how it might lead us back into, or not, things about the state of the country today. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue live on Thanksgiving Day, our 46 questions edition. It's Thanksgiving Day live on the Brian Lehrer Show, our 46 questions edition, our interactive talking and listening experiment based on the activity called 36 Questions by Arthur Aaron of Stony Brook University. And we're going to take another pair of people. If you're just joining us, we've been matching people based on their different positions and different kinds of demographics, like people who were in their 20s matched with people in their 70s earlier, people who were immigrants to this country matched with people who were born in this country, and now we're doing a couple of pairs of people who are those who voted for Donald Trump and those who are kind of horrified or even fearful because Donald Trump was elected, but not just to talk about politics, because this is not set up as a political debate. The whole point here is to rehumanize each other and get to know each other a little bit as people here on Thanksgiving Day, and we'll see what else comes into it. But I want to welcome next Michael in Bergen County, who was an anybody but Trump voter, and Jarell in Manhattan, who is a Trump supporter. Jarell, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks so much for calling
Brian.
In.
I think your person maybe got it wrong because I am horrified.
Okay. Then forgive me. Then actually, we are not going to take your call right now. Let's see if we can try Ned in Yonkers on 10, and let's see if we got him right there. Ned, are you there?
Here.
Ned, hi.
Hi.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Brian.
Did you vote for Donald Trump?
I did.
Okay. And Michael in Bergen County, did you not vote for Donald Trump?
Yes, Brian, that's correct. I voted for Hillary Clinton, actually.
Are you a little freaked out that Donald Trump is going to be the next president?
I'm concerned, Brian. Yeah, I'm concerned. I can understand why people voted for him, having reasons nothing to do with the racism and xenophobia and all those things. I can understand why people wanted to change the system. But I just, you know, I just don't think this was the man to be that change due to everything we've seen.
So, Michael, meet Ned. Ned, Michael.
Nice to meet you, Ned.
Nice to meet you, Michael.
And let me back off the politics and ask, what's the one place on earth that you want to visit, and why haven't you been there yet? Michael?
I would go with Europe. I know that's a little broad, but I've been meaning to take a trip there for a while. Unfortunately, it hasn't been possible due to work. But definitely in the next couple of years, I will have a nice two-week visit to Europe.
Where would you start in Europe?
Germany, probably work my way to France, and then Italy. And that would just be to start.
What would you want to see there? Name one thing that pops out at you.
First of all, Oktoberfest. I'm going to have to go there first. And then hopefully...
Enjoy yourself a nice pills.
Yes, absolutely. And then over to France, and then over to Italy to see the Mediterranean Ocean, or the sea.
Ned, how about you? Where's the one place on Earth you want to visit? And you know, why haven't you been there yet?
Yeah, there's so many places I want to go, literally all over the world. But the one place I've been saying for over a decade that I'm going to go to is Israel. I don't do much international travel. I was actually just in Europe with my family 2 months ago. It was the first time I'd been overseas in over a decade. But I'm pretty confident I'll make it to Israel sometime in the next year or two.
All right. And why haven't you been to these places that you've been wanting to go, since that's in the question the way it was submitted to us, by the way, by our only human host, Mary Harris, I believe. Michael, what's been stopping you from going to Europe?
Just a lot of work concerns. I'm a doctor, and it's tough to get a little bit of time away consistently for more than a week or so. So it's a little difficult, but I'm going to make it happen at some point.
Ned, how about you?
Money.
Fair enough. Always an impediment to travel for so many people. Let me go on to another one. What recurring dream or nightmare do you have, and what do you think it says about you? Ned, you willing to reveal a dream?
Yeah, I mean, I would call it more a wish. So a recurring wish I have is every couple of years I say, I'm going back to graduate school. I guess what it says about me is I'm a nerd. But I don't think I'll ever do it, but it's kind of like a
Wait, I'm
dream.
Confused. Is that a dream you have when you're sleeping, or is that something that you dream of doing?
No, that's what I'm saying. It's just a wish. I don't have any recurring dreams or nightmares.
Right. Yeah. I actually have a recurring dream that you reminded me of, which is that somebody informs me that I didn't in fact finish the last requirements of my graduate degree, and I have to leave the show and leave New York and go back to Ohio State.
Got it.
And anyway, Michael, any recurring dreams or nightmares and what they may say about you?
Something I've never shared with the greater New York area, Brian, but seeing as you were, so forthcoming as to share yours, I do have a recurring dream of operating, and while I'm operating, I fall. And, I've heard people have had recurring dreams of falling. I think it represents fear of loss of control when it comes to a patient's life. And, that's something specific to my occupation. But
Dr. Stress,
but that's my biggest fear.
Do you talk with your fellow physicians about Dr. Stress dreams? There are certainly recurring common radio person dreams. One that I have from time to time, since you brought up a occupational stress dream, I'll just share it, is that I've written like intro copy for the top of the show, and the printer jams or just won't work, and I have to start the show with no notes in front of me about what I was going to say. Usually I could BS and get through it anyway, but that's the stress dream. So I'm running down to the studio and I don't have, it won't come. So are there any other doctor stress dreams that are common? I hear that my radio one is very common among news people.
The radio one is really funny, actually. Kind of, it's akin to a public speaker having the dream about being nude. That's the radio equivalent. But, this is not something that most doctors, want to discuss and want to talk about. And I'm sure we all have our varying, different representations of stress dreams. But usually the common theme, I would say, would probably be loss of control as to how well a patient does.
Yeah.
And that's our concern.
Ned, what do you do for a living?
I'm a limousine driver, and now, based on what you guys just said, it occurs to me I do occasionally have a nightmare where I'm, like, late to pick up a client, right? And I'm, like, lost and can't figure out where I am. but that only happens, rarely, but it does happen occasionally.
Okay, so professional drivers have stress dreams, too. No surprise. If you could snap your fingers to change our society for the better in some way, what would it be? Who wants to jump in?
Uh, I'll jump in. This is Ned. If I could snap my fingers, we would stop worrying about things like race. We'd stop worrying about, you know, identity issues.
Michael?
I would definitely agree with that. I like that idea, Ned. The first thought that jumped into my mind was the removal of money from politics. Just a quick example. In Singapore, basically, you know, government officials and politicians make a very, very sizable salary that's given to them by the government. But there's extremely harsh penalties if any outside money enters politics. And, you know, let me remind everybody, this is Singapore that, you know, 20 years ago caned an American for a relatively minor infraction. So we can imagine the penalties that they have. But I think what would benefit everybody and what would have a huge trickle-down effect as far as benefit would be the complete removal of money from politics.
Well, you both agreed on it would be nice if there was not so much identity politics. Is that how you put it, Ned?
Just that, like, get the whole issue of identity out of politics. Like that people didn't view their. I think this is partly why I'm not a Democrat anymore. I'm a Republican. My complaint about Democrats is that they view everything or many things from the point of view of identity politics. I don't think identity should be a political issue. I just think it's an interesting social issue, but I don't view it as a political issue.
Go ahead, Michael.
I'm sorry, Brian. Thank you. I feel that I understand where you're coming from, Ned, that it really, you know, in an idealistic world, it shouldn't have anything to do with it. But we live in a different reality, and America is a really unique nation where, you know, everybody is possibly from a different country. This is, you know, not like most countries in the world where everybody's one color, one religion, one race, one creed. And that lends itself to some natural issues. You know, I am not a white male. I am an Egyptian, born in America, so I'm Egyptian-American, and I'm Christian. So I have a very unique view of not only American politics, but the Middle East and et cetera. What I would say is that race isn't really an issue unless you've experienced some racism. And I certainly have in my life, not as much as others, but more than I'm comfortable with, which should be zero. So I know identity politics isn't something that, you know, should be ideal, and eventually, hopefully, we end up being a society where it really doesn't matter. But for the time being, you know, racism, xenophobia, all of it, any prejudice against any group has to be recognized and at least viewed from a lens of impartiality.
Are you willing to say how racism has impacted you or expressed itself toward you?
I'll give you a couple examples. I'm frequently stopped in security lines at airports for extra screening. Even though, you know, my name is Michael and it's not even possible for me to be a Muslim extremist, but I'm brown, so I'm the right color, so I get stopped. I've been pulled over before in situations, you know, where I was racially profiled a couple of times. And after 9/11, Brian, I mean, I grew up in New Jersey, and after 9/11, that first year or two after 9/11, if you were my color, people stared at you for an extra few minutes. Is that overt racism? Is it something that directly harms me? No, but you feel it. You feel it, and you can see it, and you can sense it.
Do you find that coming back now, after the election of Trump, or even during the campaign, you know, like it was after 9/11?
I feel it this time, but just a little bit. It's a little different. This time it feels more widespread and as though there's this backlash against the last 8 years. I feel that people often forget that President Obama is half white. I feel it's a different thing this time around because it's not just, you know, major cities, the New York, New Jersey area. It's everywhere. And I feel that this campaign cycle took these emotions buried deep in all Americans, whether they're rooted in politics or in race or in gender or anything else, brought them to the surface. And Trump did an excellent job of manipulating this and turning it into his own victory. That's how I feel. I feel like we were all unwitting participants in this one way or another, no matter who you voted for.
Ned, anything on there you want to keep going on? You don't have to.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just, it's very disappointing to me that we're so focused on race, but I really blame the Democrat Party. I think the Democrat Party has tried to take advantage of racial issues, and I think Trump did the same thing, and I was very unhappy about that. I felt like my Republican Party got taken over by Trump, but I actually don't think I'm hopeful that he's not going to govern based on that at all. I'm slightly hopeful that by the end of 4 or 8 years of Trump, that we'll be less focused on race. I think Obama had a huge opportunity to escalate the whole racial issue, but I don't think he did. And I think Hillary's focus on the fact that she was female, I think, was a disservice. You shouldn't vote for somebody based on their race, their gender. You should vote for them based on their, political point of view. We'll see.
So I'm going to disengage from the political conversation. Part of what we're doing this morning is modeling for people who are going to be in politically mixed families today and are dreading it, as a CNN poll released last night found more than half of Americans are dreading Thanksgiving with politically mixed gatherings. And so part of the modeling is, after a conversation like this, say, oh, that's enough politics, and ask something else. What's your favorite holiday, and why, Michael?
I would actually say Thanksgiving. I think taking a pause to say thanks for everything around us is something we all need to do every day, but unfortunately it really is only concentrated on once a year.
Ned, favorite holiday?
Favorite holiday? I'll have to go with Thanksgiving.
All right. Do either of you have a least favorite holiday?
Least favorite holiday? Any holiday where we don't get a day off.
Oh, there you go. The alternate side of the street parking calendar.
Yes, correct.
Ned, any least favorite holiday?
I do not have a least favorite holiday.
Ned from Yonkers, Michael from Bergen County. Happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
You too, Brian. Thank you for all you do, Brian.
Thank you very much. Thank you both very much for your callers. All right. It is Thanksgiving Day live on The Brian Lehrer Show, our 46 questions edition. We'll continue in a minute, and I'll break open a new set of questions, and we'll do a different pairing. So now we've done people by age, matching people with in their 20s with people in their 70s. We've done it by immigration status, people born here with people who are immigrants. We've had these few pairings now of people who voted for Trump and people who are horrified by Trump. And we're going to wrap it up by trying to do a trio or two of people from different religious backgrounds. So I wonder, and let's clear the board from all these people who called in because of their views on Trump, and invite a Muslim, a Christian, and a Jew. I wonder if we can get a Muslim, a Christian, and a Jew on the board to answer the next set of 46 questions. And again, these aren't going to be like hitting you over the head religion questions. In fact, let's see if I can find a few to throw out there from the question set that I will ask you that are just personal Thanksgiving Day conversation questions. I will ask, who's a person from history who you've been inspired by? And who's a person from the arts who you've been inspired by? So let's see if we can create a conversation. Not that you represent everybody from your religion, but we're just trying to put different kinds of people together. So can we get a Muslim, a Christian, and a Jew to call in? We'll put the three of you on, and we'll see if we have time for another trio after that. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692, and we'll take those calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's Thanksgiving Day live on The Brian Lehrer Show, our 46 questions edition based on the activity called 36 Questions by Arthur Aaron of Stony Brook University. And we are putting together different groups of people, as I said before the break. And we've got Danielle in Franklin Park, who's identified herself as Christian. Hi, Danielle. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. And
Happy Thanksgiving.
Ibrahim in Brooklyn, who has identified himself as Muslim. Hi, Ibrahim.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for all the good things you've been doing.
Thank you very much. And Helen in Brooklyn, who identifies herself as a Jew. Hi, Helen.
Hi, Brian. Happy Thanksgiving and for this very special show.
Thank you. Helen, meet Ibrahim and Danielle. Danielle, Ibrahim and Helen.
Hello, Ibrahim and Danielle.
Hi, Danielle. Hi, Helen.
Hello. How are you?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Very well. Happy Thanksgiving.
So who's a person from history who you've been inspired by? Danielle, you want to start it off?
There's been multiple people, but the first person that came to mind was Martin Luther King, of course. And then Mother Teresa.
Okay. Ibrahim, how about you?
I choose Gandhi. Of course, there are too many in history. And I choose Gandhi for being a peaceful man and in revolt for oppression.
Helen?
Just one person?
One person for now.
The first person that came to mind was Albert Einstein.
Why Albert Einstein?
Well, because he represents for me a superb human being who was politically engaged. He was a lifelong pacifist. He was one of the very few intellectuals in Germany who spoke out against World War I. And then, of course, fascism, and continued to speak for freedom of conscience and for humanitarian of values when he came to this country and was a citizen here. And then he was, of course, this most wonderfully imaginative and courageous scientist. And so everything that I know about him, except maybe his domestic qualities as a husband, I admire very much, and he continues to inspire me.
All right. I'm going to go on to who's a person from the arts who you've been inspired by, Danielle?
Probably John Coltrane.
Oh, John Coltrane. Good one. Ibrahim?
I love Van Gogh and his art.
We've got a John Coltrane and a Van Gogh thing going here. Helen?
Oh, goodness. Shakespeare.
Not a bad trio to have over to dinner, right?
No.
Danielle, your answers so far have been in the spiritual realm, because you picked Mother Teresa and Martin Luther King as your person from history, and John Coltrane, who had that very spiritual aspect to his playing and his composition that he talked about. What was it about John Coltrane that got you?
Well, he was actually the first jazz musician that I actually listened to. I was not raised listening to jazz. Jazz was introduced to me by a friend who was an avid listener. And one day I just said, who is this? What is this? And was just so inspired by his music. And actually, I'm 42 years old, so I didn't, listen to music that didn't have words, but it just opened up so many different doors and ways of thinking about music and ways of listening to music that was so beautiful. And it really spoke to me. So when I started listening to him, it was just a different art form that I just wasn't used to. And when you asked the question, mm-hmm. he was the first person that popped up in my head.
Ibrahim, do you have a favorite Van Gogh painting?
No. Well, I like most of his work. No, I don't have a certain favorite.
Or something. God, it's hard to put into words. You know, somebody once said about music criticism that writing about music is like dancing about architecture. And I don't know if you can speak about what moves you about Van Gogh. Do you have any words?
It's just the authentic art of his work, the drawing, and his work is incredible.
Helen, Shakespeare.
Oh, that's so vast.
One thing, like maybe you can, you know, micro-target here, out of all the huge things about Shakespeare.
Well, I think Midsummer Night's Dream never fails to delight me. It is so wise and witty and tender, and so many different levels of society are portrayed and become individualized. And the poetry is gorgeous, and it's a romantic fantasy comedy. It's just lovely.
Now I'm going to ask a new question, and if you're each willing to say, do you ever picture God? And if so, what do you picture? Danielle, do you?
I choose not to picture God as far as looking a certain way, for personal reasons and things that I've been taught historically, in inaccurate depictions of Jesus. Uh-huh. But that's a whole nother conversation. So I choose to picture him as a man that walked this earth. That died for me, that made the ultimate sin for, the ultimate
sacrifice.
Dying. Thank you. I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous.
That's okay. You're doing
but,
great.
But, you know, so just a man that I love deeply and, you know, is my savior. So I don't picture him looking a certain kind of way. And actually, sometimes I don't picture him as a him. Sometimes I do picture him as a her.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's just me, but I don't have a specific way that I envision.
And Ibrahim, do you picture God? And if so, in what way?
Okay. Our perception as human beings of God is very limited, and no matter how much we can imagine, in my belief system that God, there are none like him or he, and in my imagination, he would be a pure form of light.
A pure form of light.
That's beautiful.
Helen, do you picture God in any way?
I was going to say E equals MC squared, but that opens up a whole joke, actually, what do atheistic lovers say in bed? But there is a wonderful...
I got it.
Line in the beginning in the Torah.
Can't stay away from Einstein.
God
buddy.
Created man and woman in God's image.
Uh-huh.
So, in some way, human beings in their various gender varieties somehow embody for our very limited minds the divine aspect of the divine spirit of energy in the world, in the universe.
Does anybody want to ask a follow-up question of either of the other two, just based on anything that anybody said so far? Helen, you got a question for somebody?
I think, yes, for both Danielle and Ibrahim. The people that came to your mind that inspire you, are they real presences in your lives? Do you seek them out for inspiration when you are troubled or uncertain or depressed? Or
okay, not people. As for me, not people. I connect with God and have a mental conversation and explore the situation to find solutions.
Ah, yeah.
You have the same question for Danielle. You had a reaction to that, Helen?
Yes, I think that's very profound and very beautiful.
Danielle?
I agree. I feel as though that we do have to reach out to God first for direction. But I also look to the way people who have lived and lived their lives for just because I can never achieve the things. I can never be God, but I can do godly-like things. And the people that I first looked to or spoke about as sources of inspiration did really, really beautiful things on this earth for all different types of people. So I respect them when I think of them and their journey and how they chose to live their life. I do look up to them, but there's only one God that I would pray to for help and for the ultimate guidance. So if that helps.
Do you have a follow-up question, Danielle, that you'd like to ask either Ibrahim or Helen?
I do. My question more is, do you make active choices to engage with people who are not of your faith?
Oh, yes. In fact, for years I was part of a group called the Dialogue Project, in which Christians and Muslims and Jews got together on a monthly basis to get to know each other as individuals and to hear each other's, listen to each other's personal stories.
Oh, so you're right at home in this grouping. Ibrahim, how about you?
Yes, as for me, actually I make certain that I connect with all people, regardless of background, religion, and try to give them the correct perception about my religion, about Islam, because it is unfortunately misconstrued in America and in the West. And I would love for people to really change their perspective and get the correct information in that regard.
Like misconstrued how? That's important.
Because of there is a lot of chaos going on in the world, not just in our society as Americans, in the world, and people take the good and the bad and group them all together as this is Islam, or get the wrong idea about Islam. Islam is a religion or a message of peace and love, and live and let live. It is not by coercion, and it is not by force. It's by choice.
Beautiful. We have 2 minutes left in the show. Certainly not enough time to do justice to another group of callers. So let me just ask you each to give me, like, a soundbite, even though this show has been the opposite of that, just on what Thanksgiving means to you, personally or as it pertains to our country. Helen, you want to start?
Okay.
But short.
Thanksgiving is an opportunity for me, and I hope for the people in this country who join together in one way or another to celebrate it, is to really become as aware as you can of what is in your life that you should be grateful for or you sometimes just take for granted.
That was beautiful, and I'm going to leave it there and ask Ibrahim the same question. What does Thanksgiving mean to you personally or as it pertains to our country?
Okay, it means appreciation for what we have and the opportunity to coexist as human beings and really enjoy life and not oppose one another and harp on the differences. Appreciate the similarities.
Danielle?
And I would just say just to be thankful for this very moment, to just give thanks for what you have. Look around if you have walls and something over your head, that you have shelter, and that if you have food on the plate, you have food today. And you really need to be thankful for that, because I work in a social work department, and I know so many families this year are struggling and don't have what other people have. And you really do need to take a moment and just be thankful for what you do have today, and take a moment and think about the people that are less fortunate and lift them up in prayer, or send positive thoughts, or try to just think about them, because everything in life is not guaranteed. So
beautiful way to end. Danielle in Franklin Park, Ibrahim in Brooklyn, Helen in Brooklyn, you've been an inspiration to thousands of people this morning, and thank you so much for engaging on Thanksgiving Day. Happy holiday to all of you.
Happy holidays,
Brian, Helen, and everybody. Happy holiday. Enjoy your Thanksgiving, and thank you. Thank you for everything.
Thank you all. And that is today's Brian Lehrer Show. Today's activity was inspired by Arthur Aaron's 36 questions from his Interpersonal Relationships Lab at SUNY Stony Brook and the How to Be a Better Listener project done by WNYC's Only Human podcast. For more Thanksgiving listening tips and tricks, head over to onlyhuman.org/listenup. And for more great Thanksgiving Day radio here on WNYC right now, stay tuned for the Leonard Lopate Show. As for me, it's over the East River and through the woods of Queens I go to my parents' house. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you.